Hello, we are Terra Nova, a horror podcast hosted by Kendall and Jackie, and here we talk about everything horror. And this podcast is specifically for you, the horror fans, and the non-horror fans. If you're too scared to watch the movies, it's fine. We talk about it, we discuss it, we dissect it, we laugh about it, talk about the good, the bad, and the tropes. And we have new episodes released Tuesdays bi-weekly.
And follow us on Facebook and Instagram at TerraNova_podcast. But also feel free to reach out through email at terranova.pod@gmail.com. And most importantly, tell a friend, tell a friend, tell a friend.
And tell your dog too. Cujo.
Hello.
Hey, Jack. What's going on?
That was actually really friendly. Who are you? The fuck?
I'm your number two favorite hater. No, I can't be number one, so I'm gonna just be number two.
That's true. But yeah.
I was telling Jackie the other day, I was like, Jackie is my number one, my number two, I'm hater. My number one is my wife.
Oh.
Jackie is definitely number two.
Ice cold.
I love Anastasia, yo. I love her so much. Like, anytime Anna could just, like, fucking roast you, I'm behind her, like, yes, queen, yes. Like, I'm like her number one supporter with that. Since day one.
I can't have you meeting my husband then, because if he turns into a hater, I don't know what I'm gonna do. I can't handle it.
It's all in fun. It's just hilarious that we be doing it around people. People be like, damn, they really love each other the way they be roasting each other. I'm like, get ahead with your big head. Like, we be just cracking jokes. We dumb.
I like how he tried to slide that in there. So you better get him back, Jackie. He tried to slide that in there real quick. Don't ever let it pass.
My household is very fun. We stay having a ball. And then, you know, I watch shit like this, and then she notoriously will walk in the room and be like, this is shit you watch? And I'll be like, yo, I'm watching for the podcast. Don't judge me. So, what this is like.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Like, some of the movies, like, anything French Extremity definitely gets me the side eye, like, I don't know.
Maybe wild. Be doing too much. They be doing way too much.
Good times, though.
But yeah, it is good times. They be wild. But I know you guys hear that extra voice, and you're like, what the hell is going on? And I'm like, for the people who did not read the description, which I appreciate you for just hitting play without even reading. for those folks, we got a guest this week. We got Brother Ghoulish, one-third of Blurry Murder. The man was a writer, content creator. A lot of things I probably didn't going to miss in this intro. But welcome along, man. We are so happy to have you. We're big fans. How's it going, Brother Ghoulish?
Doing really good. Thanks for having me out. I'm excited to talk with y'all today.
I mean, it's been
all good, man. Thank you.
And also, it's been a while since we did a Terra Talk in quite some time. So it's also good to bring that back. So, yes, you're like our first guest in a very long time for our Terra Talks.
Well, I really appreciate
it.
Yeah,
man. Oh, no, I was just agreeing with Jackie. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just saying I appreciate it. That's all. I'm sorry. I have really bad social gauging. I'm like, oh, no, I'll talk exactly when someone else is talking. That's part of my plan. Wow. I don't know.
I do the same thing all the time, so it's all good. But for the people who don't know you, which if they don't, I'm going to have to talk to them after this. But for the people who don't know you, you tell them a little bit about yourself. Tell them everything that I missed in the intro, basically.
So my name is Ryan. I go by Brother Ghoulish, mostly online. I love talking about horror. I do it mostly nowadays on Blurry Massacre with Miss Sheree. And also Zero Gravity. And I also released a book recently, There's Something Wrong in Warrenton County, which is 12 short stories, all with different queer leads of color facing against some crazy stuff, like flesh-eating pixies and killer thighs.
Flesh-eating pixies? How you come up with that one? I gotta hear that story.
Well, it's kind of a long story, but I like writing about things I haven't seen before. And, you know, I like stuff like Gremlins when I was a kid, so I wanted to have something like a creature feature and just have some fun with it.
We love gremlins.
Jackie language, no.
Yes. Yes. Every time someone calls me a gremlin, I'm just like, oh, thank you. That's like my Christmas movie. I watch that every year for Christmas. That is my Christmas story.
Do you like Gremlins 1 or 2 more? Because I know there's like some people who actually lean towards 2 a little bit more.
That was hard. I mean, 2 is definitely more funnier than the first one. But I don't know. It's just the first one. It's more like soft in my heart. I know the sequel takes place during New Year's Eve, but the first one is like, that's just more special to me than the second one. The second one's just funny.
I agree. especially because of that Santa scene. That girl, that poor girl was scarred for life.
Yes, covered in all those gremlins. Oh my god.
You're gonna make me watch it after this, but yeah.
The second one is the one where it's like kind of a commentary on sequels and just them kind of making extreme examples of everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that the third? Okay, cool. I haven't seen it in so long. The last time I saw the first one was when we did it for the podcast. So I remember the first one very vividly. And I remember the second one. I'm being very crazy. So I didn't know it was kind of a divide on which ones people loved the most.
I mean, in my head it is. I mean, you'll see a lot of that come out today. It's a lot of horror wars in my head that probably don't even exist. People listening like, no, the first one is definitely superior.
Oh my god. Yo,
why do you do that?
We're the same way. I hope you know that. Kendall and I are the same way. We're talking about franchises. We're just like, I wonder which one was better than the other. Maybe this one. No. Like,
I feel like I don't put it in the world as often, though, so people don't curse me out as much. I still get messages about Scream all the time.
And Halloween.
Hold up. What did you say out your mouth about Scream, sir?
All right. I'm going to start with a disclaimer. First, I'm going to say the first Scream is my favorite horror movie probably ever.
Okay.
I love the first one so much. But my only opinion of Scream, which isn't even bad, like, I'm not telling people not to like it. I've just always said the sequels aren't memorable to me. Even though I've seen them all, they're just not memorable to me, so I kind of don't think they're as good as the first one. That is all I said.
I'm going to respect that. I'm in your house right now.
You ain't got to respect it. You can go on. I already get the DMs. You can't get worse.
No, because my eyebrows hit my hairline. I got to lower them, you know?
Oh my god.
I mean, okay, this is all I'm going to say. I'm going to just say one thing and I'm going to leave it alone. Just one thing. How can you say all that right when Parker Posey fully happened in Scream 3? How?
What? I don't know, man. I don't know. It's just, I felt like the sequels were just trying to capture something that I just wasn't connected with me. But I'm not going to tell people not to like it, because I like movies that aren't good. I'm not saying they aren't good. I'm just saying I like movies that aren't good. And hell, Jackie and several of my friends get on me about movies I like that aren't good. So I understand liking something that other people don't.
Okay.
I'm just saying they aren't for me, despite how much I love the original.
It's true.
I like movies that...
Y'all still get cursed out for Batman vs. Superman. So I understand people liking movies that people don't like. I understand.
Wait, Batman versus Superman. Yeah, that one was... But there are movies that I like, too, that people don't like. So I'm with you there. Like, I'm a huge fan of Amityville, It's About Time. Like, where they go back in time with the evil clock. It's like, oh, give me more. Same difference with...
They go back in time?
You haven't seen, let me tell you.
No, I haven't seen that.
It's on Tubi. I mean, you shouldn't be surprised by that. But, yeah, there is a clock that is inside the Amityville house, and it takes them back and forth through time, and it is so campy. It's the worst one probably, but I love it and I can't get enough of it. I watch it all the time and I'm always singing it's gospel. Even me saying it's bad, that's me just doing, like, you know, the preparations in case anyone hears this and they go and watch it. But in my opinion, it's not a bad movie.
Well, didn't the Amityville also go to space? So it can't be worse than going to space.
It was worse.
It was worse. Damn.
I don't know how. I think it's because it was the first time that they started fooling around like that I can recall. Or at least it's the first time I saw them do it. Like, this one's older. It's from the 90s. Like, it's like 1992 or something. So they didn't have the graphics to back up the camp. It was a lot happening.
Space.
That's really wild. Well, as you people listening can see, Brother Ghoulish has opinions about horror. This is why I'm a fan of a lot of the content that he produces everywhere. He has, like, really interesting opinions. I was watching some stuff the other day where you were, the most recent thing I was watching where you were talking about Vampire Diaries, and that was just funny because I remember watching that movie when I was in high school. So, I mean, watching that show when I was in high school. So it was kind of fun to just see someone who has, like, you know, clear eyes, didn't know what the hell's going on. Let me just kind of watch it from scratch. That was just, like, really fun to see someone experiencing that.
Oh, well, the thing is, like, the Vampire Diaries for me was, like, that nice little break I needed because I spent so long, like, before I started doing Brother Ghoulish, like, I loved watching horror, but it was more so driven by, like, oh, let me just watch whatever the scare of the week is or what I feel like watching right now. But then I felt like this certain level of, like, oh, I need to keep up with what's going on when I was, like, starting the podcast. Mm-hmm. So doing stuff like just randomly saying, I'm going to watch The Vampire Diaries is what I was doing behind the scenes anyway. So I like on TikTok that I am able to talk to people about it. I mean, I talked to my husband about it, obviously, but, you know, his dynamic is different. He doesn't want to talk about it for more than 10 minutes. And I'm like, oh, no, going to TikTok and fully doing a whole series on this because I need to talk about every single character.
Jackie, did you get into Vampire Diaries when it was out?
A bit, because, like, that was the year when vampires was everywhere. Like, Twilight, all this shit. Vampire Night was a thing. Trinity Blood, even the animes were out nonstop with vampires. Because that was the year where it was just Vampire Central. That was the year. Everybody was talking about vampires. And, like, I did get into it a bit, and then I kind of fell off it. I think because I was watching too many things at the same time. So I was just like, yeah, I'm tired. I need a break.
Wait a minute, what's Vampire Night? That sounds interesting.
It's an anime and a manga. Do not watch the anime. The anime is trash, but read the manga. Because I wasted time watching the anime, and to this day, I'm still pissed off about that. So whenever people talk about Vampire Night, I'm like, read it, don't fucking watch it. Unless you don't care about the storyline and you just care about really good gothic music, cool. If anything, just read it.
I do like goth music, but nah, I'm happy you're giving me this heads up because I do like anime and some manga, but I just haven't seen a lot of it or read a lot of it, rather. I read a lot more manga when I was in middle school, but I miss it so much because it was so good. Mm-hmm. And like, I still read Junji Ito, obviously, because, you know, king, but I always do want to like branch out and like read more horror manga. So I definitely will check that out. That sounds interesting.
Junji Ito is my Japanese poppy. I'm just saying it right now. That's my papa.
I didn't know you were a fan too. Oh my God. Like,
girl, I have every book. I have every book. Introduce me to him. Yes, I have like all his books. Like, oh my God. Oh my God. I mean, you know what? We're going to talk after the spot. We're going to talk after this episode. I literally know. We're going to talk after this fucking episode.
look. You know to hit me up because, look, we can't go down Edo because we won't go away. Okay, all right.
I'm sorry, Kendo.
It is what it is. I feel like every time we bring on a guest, I'm just giving Jackie more friends.
We have to corrupt you. Have you gotten into Edo yet? Like, have you gotten into Edo? Like, we can corrupt you. I mean, maybe not here, but
I know I've checked out some of it because Jackie told me about the guy when we first started the podcast, and I was like, "Oh, I've never heard of him." She was like, "You never heard of him?" And then she just kept sending me stuff. She was like, "Here's the book if you want to get this. Here's if you want to get this." I was like, "Man, I'm about to drop like $100 on these books because this shit look amazing." And then everything she tells me sounds so great to the point where at some point we're going to have to do an episode or something just about the guy because he has such good work. So, yeah, I'm definitely into the stuff. I'm into his work. Everything I've seen is really interesting. Even the Netflix series, I didn't finish it, but most of it that I saw was, like, really dope. So I'm into the dude. It's just, it's one of those things where, like, you know, you don't notice something until you're aware of it.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know everyone around me loved this guy until Jackie said his name, like, once. And then I just started hearing it everywhere. And I was like, oh, shit, like, everyone loves this guy. It was just one of those things.
You know what's funny about that? Like, I think that he's getting his second resurgence. Because, like, I remember getting into him when, like, I was younger. But he's starting to blow up now. He even has, like, a TV show come out on Adult Swim for Usamaki.
Yes!
And I think that's
going to
be a lot of people's first time getting into him. And they're so lucky. Because there's been so much trial and error with figuring out how to get his manga to really translate properly onto like film or screen. And this is going to be the first time. I'm telling y'all right now, I saw those trailers. They finally found the balance. And it makes me happy they pushed that shit back. Because at first it was supposed to come out before, but Ito's camp released a statement saying, no, like, we're not ready. We're going back to the drawing board because he threw interference. Well, his team rather. And I'm happy they did this. Ooh, I can't wait to see the show. It's going to be so good.
Like, I told Kendall, because I've read Uzumaki from beginning to end, and I told Kendall, I was like, just be warned, you're going to get really annoyed, you're going to get very irritated, and it's going to piss you off, because Uzumaki did nothing but stress me the fuck out. I was just like, you know what, when I was done reading it, I was just like, you know what, I want to go back to reading till May, because I'm done with this shit. I just threw the book at the corner. I was like, fucking hate this shit. Uzumaki pissed me off. It's really good, though. Really good. For those who have never read Uzumaki, I highly recommend you read it. It's just that it is going to irritate you a lot with some characters.
Oh,
you're going to yell at them, like, what the fuck's wrong with you? But, again, it's really good.
Were you yelling at Miss Cochlea? Be honest. The cochlea lady
every
or no?
Every damn time. I was just like, what is wrong with you? Like, girl, your man is telling you we need to leave. But you need to leave. Like, yeah, we gotta talk after the podcast.
Yeah. Yes.
This girl is stressed.
So anyway.
You all right, Jack? You got it out your system? You good?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Back to the terror talk. Back to the terror talk.
Oh, man. So, Brother Coolidge, back to you. Like, tell some of the folks some of the things that you kind of like to talk about on, just in general, podcasts, your content, all types of stuff. Like, tell people about, like, why you create. Like, what got you into horror? That's what I need to know, actually. What got you into horror?
So, what got me into horror was growing up in a horror household, like, for sure. Like, my dad was, like, mm-hmm. really into mostly vampire movies. So, I saw, like, Blackula and stuff when I was a kid. And some other stuff slipped through that I didn't recall. But talking with him, he reminds me that he did show me things like Sugar Hill back in the day, for example, and Petey Wheatstraw. But and some of the stuff that I saw when I was a kid was because of my older brother, because he watched horror too, but he was more into like the slashers. So I saw Halloween because of him. And he even took me and my younger brother to the theater to like see Halloween. Which one was it? It wasn't H2O. It was Resurrection, which was the first one I saw in theaters.
Well, Busta Rhymes.
Oh, yeah. And I, you know what's funny? We all collectively seem to agree that like, oh, that one's not so good. But I just look at it through rosy shades because I remember like being in the theater, seeing it, being in love with Tyra Banks as well, and being in love with Busta Rhymes and seeing them in this movie. So it just has a special place in my heart. And
yeah, I don't think it's that bad, to be honest with you. I'm in that camp with Halloween where I'm like, I don't think that franchise is great. So it's not.
Yeah.
So it is what it is.
I think Halloween is a look. Okay, let me, because you, it's going to turn to, you know. But so, and my mom was like really into Southern Gothic horror movies, and I didn't know that's what it was called at the time, obviously, but like she liked stuff like Eve's Bayou, anything with old girl in it, Betty Davis, so like What Happened to Baby Jane and all those movies around that time. But I don't know, like my first like, oh, I'm obsessed with horror was like definitely the first Scream, like you said. Like I love that film. It really just got me so excited about the genre.
Yeah.
Also was reading it quite a bit. Like I used to read like Edgar Allan Poe and stuff, Goosebumps. And
same.
It just was. And then you think about TV. That's what's scary. It was everywhere around us without thinking about it, because there was even shows like I can't think of the name of it. Beyond Belief, Factor Fiction, The Twilight Zone, The Outer Limits.
Yep.
I watched all that stuff. And I'm going to throw a wild card in there and say America's Most Wanted, because that was horror. I that show scared hell out of me. I just always...
You used to watch it every Saturday, too?
Oh, yeah. And, like, we would turn the lights off like fools, like me and my brothers, and it would it was so frightening. Like...
Yo.
That was scarier to me than, like, Halloween, to be honest.
It really was. Nah, that makes sense. Like, I feel like the only silver lining with that show was John Walsh. Like, granted, very tragic backstory.
Yeah.
I'm not making fun of that. But that man's face and determination told me everything I needed to know. I was like, I feel like, I used to say this even when I was a kid. I was like, I felt like when Ebony caught a criminal, he wanted to personally see them first just so he could spit on them. Like, I felt like he had that kind of energy.
My man.
Where he's like, I need to let him know I'm the reason I got him. Like, that's what made the show really entertaining to me, was like his like determination was so insane watching that show. But you know, it's because of obviously what happened to his son. But that man's, I felt like he was a true hero for justice. Like, you don't talk about Batman, but like the good version, that was that was John Walsh.
He was definite. He walked so Chris Hansen could fly. Like, they're definitely of the same ilk, in my opinion. And I really love what they're about, though, because they're like monsters out here. That's why, like, when it comes to true crime, I don't watch as much true crime, because to me, reality is scarier, to be honest. Like, the stuff that people can do to each other is inconceivable. I feel more comfortable watching something like, I think of the most gruesome horror movie you've ever seen. You know what I mean? Like The Sadness, for example. Like, that's super gory, but I can palate that better than freaking reality sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, we always have this conversation all the time, too, like on the podcast with any guest we have or just between Kendall and I, where you know, people like to put horror in the box and don't realize that horror is very unlimited. Everything is horror, especially when it comes to something that's very real and too close to home. And I feel like horror really is the best genre to really talk about those topics that you normally can't in society, because it's always like a group of people that are like, oh, we don't talk about that, we can't talk about that, or hush, hush, hush. But put it in a horror genre, it becomes normalized. It's so interesting how that works.
That is interesting. I wonder what it is. Like, that's actually a fascinating discussion to get into, to be honest. Because how it is, like, presented to us does change the way that we receive it completely. Like, you're right. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, they even know that when they market movies sometimes, because they try to say, oh, it's based on a true story. And that changes the viewing experience sometimes.
Yeah, it definitely does. Like, regardless of what kind of movie it is, whether it's, like, a possession or a slasher, you kind of, like, always in the back of your head, you got that itch of, like, did shit happen like this? Or even close to this, because this is terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's true. Very, very true. Okay. So, the name. How did Brother Ghoulish, like, how did that name came about, and what was the beginning of, like, your horror content?
So, it all came to me at once. Like, me and my husband were at, like, we were just chilling, and I do this random thing with him. It's, like, part of our, like, I'm just a really silly, goofy person. I come up with, like, rhymes and riddles and stuff. It's just me. And I remember I said, greetings, everyone. Welcome to Brother Ghoulish's Tomb, where it's all about the brains. I'm your host, Brother Ghoulish. And I just did the whole spill. And he was like, because I do this all the time. You know what I mean? But this was like one of those times where he was just like, did you write that? And I was like, no. He said, you should write it down. Like, that was a really good idea. And around that time, I had some friends that were telling me I should do podcasting. So I hadn't come up with an idea yet. I didn't know what I wanted to talk about or how to tackle it. So it was always in the back of my mind, like, what would I do? How would I tackle this? But that was the moment that Brother Ghoulish happened. And because I was really excited about the idea of talking about horror, something I love, and I had all these short stories that I wanted to tell people anyway, I kind of started the podcast like within a week. Like, I was just, everything just happened, like, boom, boom, boom. Like, I contacted some people to help with the podcast art. Because I know the things I can and can't do, and I like supporting creators. Mm-hmm. Like, instead of me being so, oh, I can do everything myself, I'm just like, I can't draw. I can barely breathe and blink at the same time. So I reached out to a few people just to help me get everything going, paid them, and, you know, Brother Ghoulish's Tomb started. And all the stories that I was reading, because for people who don't know about Brother Ghoulish's Tomb, because it might be gone now, I don't know, I gotta check. The beginning of the podcast used to be horror short stories that I had written. And then the second half, I would do my horror takes. And that was just a chance for me to kind of like play with how creative my mind is. And most of those stories all of them ended up in my book. So when the book came out, that was a revisiting of these stories that I had pretty much invested like about a year or two kind of like working on and stuff like that. And that was the beginning of me doing like Brother Ghoulish. And I was meeting all these really amazing people. And that's how you found me on like Blurdy Massacre, for example, and working with other people, because, you know, I found this network and everybody was just really receptive to like what was going on at that time. And even though I'm still trying to figure it out, I still show up in the way that like resonates for me. So that's why now you can catch me on TikTok, because I found out that I can kind of like do it like boom, you know, like I can have an idea, do a video real quick, and then start talking with people. And it just felt really natural and organic, and I was okay with that. And now, right now on TikTok, I'm talking about, like you said, the Vampire Diaries. I'm talking about my horror fan theories, which are my favorite, but they take a long time to pull together. And I'm also reading Freddy versus Jason versus Ash, the comic book series, just because I wanted to take someone along with me on that adventure. And so that's kind of like the growth of like my content, or where it is right now. And sometimes you can also catch me like writing articles about the genre, because I do work for Creepy Catalog, and I work through their TikTok as well. So sometimes you'll see me pop up over there. In fact, if you're ever on TikTok or like Horror Talk, I pop up randomly in places sometimes. It's just,
yes,
I don't know. I'm just having a really good time just kind of spreading my wings and seeing everything that's going on. And yeah, that's kind of what, you know, what got me into this.
Okay.
Hey, it works for you, man. I really appreciate some of the stuff that you be talking about. It's interesting. It's sometimes like universe bending. That's also something where you were talking about, like Billy and Loomis from Billy from Scream and Loomis from Halloween. I was like, it was a lot of interesting stuff. I kind of like the multiverse of your brain.
It pisses some people off though. Like there was this I was telling Sheree this once. There was this one dude who he was so sick of my fan theories that he did like a like he stitched me, and he was just like, you know, he needs to be put in his place. It was like this older white dude. He needs to be put in his place, coming around here fucking with our genres and stuff. I mean, not genres. He didn't say this. Sorry, franchises. Fucking with our franchise. People in the comments. Yeah. And so what I did, because I don't know. Somebody was like, oh yeah, like, and then everything he has to say about Michael Myers, and he spelled Myers wrong. So I actually commented on it and like fixed it, like put Myers or whatever. He blocked me. And I'm just like, I just love these franchises, you know, like this is how I actually show my love. Because if you ever really sit down and watch Friday the 13th, I think this is a perfect example, right? There are so many continuity errors, but I don't think that we cared when we were kids. We just wanted to see Jason get people out of here. And as we've become adults, I feel like the reason that these franchises have stopped, in addition to their legal battles, is because they really don't know what to do next. It's like, okay, how are we going to revisit this? And I grew up watching this stuff. Like, this is fun for me. So yeah. I'm like, let me just go ahead and just throw my hat in the ring and just like tie these things together, because that's how it is in my head anyway. Like, if you come and have beers with me and watch horror movies, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to point out things. Yeah. Like, I'm going to say, like, it's interesting that this character is in this one, but then she's also over here. I wonder if there's any way they could be related. Like, there's a Nancy, for example, in Friday the 13th, who Jason doesn't stop because, you know, she was praying, I believe. And even though her hair's a little blonde, her mom could have remarried, you know, like, and this could be Nancy from Friday the 13th, from A Nightmare on Elm Street. I mean, it's probably not, but, you know, in Brother Ghoulish's world, it's fun to do. Yeah.
And a lot of these movies be having Easter eggs like that intentionally.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They name a character intentionally after a character from a different franchise. It's like a bit of a homage and like love letter. So it's not ridiculous to say these things. Like, they're called theories for a reason.
And sometimes the theories are proven right. Like there was like a rumor for a long time that Jason was a deadite. And talking to Bobby, shout out to Bobby, you know, he was really the one that kind of like told me, like, no, this is not a guesstimation. Like, he is an actual deadite. Like, there, the signs are there. And as I've dug through, Bobby is 100%. Oh, sorry, what? Yeah, from Evil Dead. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah. I had a feeling you meant that, but I wasn't 100% sure. I'm still getting up on that franchise, to be honest with you.
Oh, I mean, honestly, man, like, it's a good time. And like, it's really disseminated into so much of the Friday the 13th work because the filmmakers are close friends. And so the Easter eggs are there. But beyond that, he's an actual deadite. You know, like, you see the Necronomicon in one of the Friday the 13ths in the background. And then when we go into the comic books, we see that Pamela Voorhees actually used the Necronomicon to bring Jason back. And this is in the comics, which is non-canon. But when you think about the fact that this was going to be the sequel to Freddy versus Jason, I mean, this isn't coming from nowhere. It's just...
Hold on, they were planning an Evil Dead and Friday the 13th movie?
Yeah, so this is what happened. After Freddy versus Jason, they were going to do a sequel to Freddy versus Jason, and they approached Bruce, like, to talk to him about it. And the camp was on board with doing a Freddy versus Jason versus Ash, which would have been the sequel, and it would have shipped in the Deadite universe. But there was a problem. Bruce and the rest of the camp said, awesome, Ash slays Freddy and Jason, and we're on. And they're like, we didn't really want Ash to, you know, kill them. I thought I was on TikTok. I was about to say unalive. Kill them. And so they were like, oh, and then it just fell apart. They call it creative differences. I mean, Bruce was talking about it in New York Comic Con around that time. So people were like, oh, the movie's coming. And it never happened. But the comic books took all of what would have happened, and they told the story. So we see what would have happened. And if you want to see it, go to my TikTok. I actually made a whole playlist. I made a whole playlist because it's such a good time seeing Freddy get a hold of the Necronomicon and controlling Deadites. Oh my God, it's such a good time.
Mm. Oh, that sounds dope. What do you think about something like that, Jackie? Would you be interested in something like that?
I probably would. I mean, that would be cool and stuff. I mean, like, there's talk now of kind of like a similar thing where they did with Freddy versus Jason, but they are planning on putting together Insidious with Sinister. There's talk of that happening in the future, and I'm actually really excited because it is fun to think about that, where like some of these movies and some of these universes can coexist. Like, I remember when I first saw the recent Evil Dead, where I was like, oh yeah, that's right, I forgot there are like 7 different types of the books. It's not just one, there's mm-hmm. 7 of them, there's several of them around the world. So I do think it's fun mm-hmm. to do that with the whole universe and say like, oh, maybe this is that, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's fun. Like, I mean, again, horror, it is fun too to see the Easter eggs. Like, I mean, the first Scream name dropped so many fucking movies up the ass, but the whole entire movie name dropped every movie known to man, because Scream itself was a love letter to horror. Yeah, I like it. I mean, when you told me that the guy kept, like, you know, bothering you about your content, I was like, did you have a chair on you? Because, you know, always use a chair to throw at people.
In the words of Tanana really? Reeve, do lift every chair and swing. Like,
y'all too much. Y'all too much. Man, I just really want to see Chucky versus Leprechaun. Can I get that before I clock out? Like, I don't plan on dying no time soon. But this is the hill I want to die on. I wanted to see this movie since I was like 10. Sure. Let me get Chucky versus Leprechaun. They both use magic. You come up with some motivation. Let me get this movie.
Every time we record, we have a guest or no guest. I'm not joking. Kendo always brings this shit up. Every goddamn time. Even when we're talking normally, just outside, just hanging out. He's just like, yo, they gotta make that movie already. Like, every fucking time. Please, somebody make it.
Put it into the universe. Yes,
please, somebody make it. Otherwise, I'm just gonna get very annoyed after a while. So please, please, somebody make it. Please make him happy. Please.
Please.
And if they do, can they bring back the Leprechaun's obsession with shining shoes? Because there's some natural fodder there with him going for Chucky's shoes and realizing that, oh, you got these, you know, Chucks. So he's like, come on, try them on. And we see the Leprechaun wearing the Chucky shoes. Or, like, he tries to set him up. So, like, you see the little feet running across the thing, and it's, like, the Chucky shoes. And then you go behind the wall, and it's him taking them off, like, I don't like these. Or something like
this. See, he sees the vision, Jackie. He sees the vision.
I'm not knocking you down for it. I'm fine with it. It's just, you. Again, he talks about this all the time.
You know what? So the one thing that I keep bringing up, the Sheree and Zero are like that with Blurry Massacre. I swear, and I hope they hear this right now so they feel bullied, and y'all should take my side. Listen to watch Sharktopus and Terracuda. That's an example. Because, like, every time I bring it up, the way they just, like, look at each other, and I'm just like, no, y'all are going to watch this movie. That's my version of that. Do you have something like that, though, Jackie? Like, something that, like, you look, this has to happen for me to know peace. It's got to be something, like, whether it's a sequel you want to make happen or crossover. Oh, what about a crossover between Usamaki and The Ring? Do you want that?
I had to mute myself because I was laughing extremely loud. But, you know, yes, Usamaki versus The Ring. Why not? Yeah, why not be traumatized? Yeah, because The Ring, especially the Japanese version, that should traumatize the shit out of me. So, yes.
Give me the trauma. Well, not really, because, you know, we've got a lot of that. But you know what I mean? I want this for this crossover. And then, you know, go back to...
That's what I'm saying. They did what? The Grudge and The Ring? They did that as a versus. I don't know who asked for that one, because they're so similar. I'm like, they're too similar. But I'm sure it was a fun movie from what I've heard, but they just seem too similar to me.
Yeah, I mean, they are quite similar. I don't even know how a battle between them would go. Like, it's something that's been on my list forever, but to be honest, it's just, I don't know. I mean, I'm going to watch it, you know, once I do my ring dive. Like, right now, I'm in a Friday the 13th Evil Dead dive, and then, you know, once I come up for air, it may be The Ring next. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm going to check that out, too. Freddy versus Jason, that was something people wanted for years, too. I mean, as a kid, like, I remember when I was in the fifth grade, there was a kid in my class who could draw really good named Elliot. He was a really nice kid. And I remember I asked him to like draw something in my draw something on the back of my binder. That's what kids used to do that. I was like, draw something in my binder that he knew I would like or something. And he was like, oh, you like horror movies, right? I was like, yeah. He like drew. It literally what ended up like, it wasn't because of him, but it basically was the exact cover for like Freddy versus Jason. The movie came out years later, but you know, it's like a versus photo, like a video game. So it was like, you know, Jason holding the machete and then Freddy holding his hand up. And it ended up, when the movie came out, I was like, that's dope. It's like I had this in my binder before they even made the movie. But that was definitely something people wanted for a long time. And honestly, I think that movie's pretty good. I wish we'd have got more versus movies off of it. I think Freddy versus Jason was actually pretty dope.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was Team Jason for that whole entire movie because Freddy's a dick. So.
Oh, same. And Freddy a pedophile. I ain't never ruined for you. Fuck that.
Freddy versus Jason. It was literally a cultural reset. Some people say they weren't really satisfied with the ending, though. Which was a surprise to me because the way I think about it is like this, and I'm not going to stay here long or anything. Like, I never expect any of these monsters to really be dead indefinitely. Like, that's not the point.
Same.
Like, they're always going to fucking come back. So people being like, oh, well, nobody really won. It's like, who can win between a fucking deadite and somebody that gets you out of here in your nightmares? Who can really win? There's so much happening right there. And then bringing Ash in, he's a human, but he's like the chosen one. So like, then who wins in that scenario? It's not about that. It's about the journey or the adventure, in my opinion. Seeing them interact and hearing all the banter. Because like, Chucky, Freddy, and Ash all have this thing where they're really funny. Like, they have, like, really witty banter. And, you know, Ash is a little racist, which, you know, they're going to have to work on that. But, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like the people, the only person that wins is the people who's actually survived. Like, the creatures, they're going to live. But it's the people, like, the fact that anyone survives a scenario at all as a human being is insane. So it's like, good job. And that was pretty much how I felt at the end of Freddy vs. Jason. I was like, I think two people made it, right? Like the girl and I think the guy.
Yeah.
Or
something like Lori and Will. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was like, cool. Somebody made it because the creatures, they like you said, they always come back. Like, you know, shit. Jason literally went to hell and they came back. So they always come back.
Yeah. Also because they were on Jason's turf. And she was just like, we're going to help Jason. And then, yeah, that's how basically how. Yeah.
Yeah, good point.
Well, Jason's a lot more reasonable than Freddy. Freddy out here fucking with your sleep. Jason just like, yo, stay off my block and you good, bro. Just don't come on my block.
Yeah, so, for real.
I'll stay out of Crystal Lake. That's way easier to do than it is to not sleep.
You also can't talk shit about his mom. You can't do mama jokes. He's going to kill you. He's like, what you talk about my mama?
Oh, that's fine. Yeah.
That's fine. We left mama jokes in the past. Too many people got shot and killed. We don't do that no more.
Yeah, you say
that is fine.
You say something about her, he gonna raise up on you like Will Smith. Like I don't know. You leave him alone.
Nah. Keep my mother's name out your fucking mouth.
Oh my god.
Oh man.
That's the crossover we need. Friday the 13th in the hood. That is the
crossover we need.
Okay, no, please, because. I want to say this stuff, and then they're going to make it. I have to be very careful, because, like, they already shipped Leprechaun into, quote-unquote, the hood. Did y'all watch those sequels?
Yes, I did. The second one was terrible, but the first one is kind of a classic.
Yeah. And he went to space.
Yes, and space was one of my favorites, too. That was great. That was hilarious.
Oh, my
Leprechaun
God.
Leprechaun franchise has gone so far.
What I like about him going into space was that damn Dr. Mitten spider when he fused with a spider. Oh my god. What are we watching?
I love how he got big and the first thing he did was look at his balls. It was so random. I was like, he doesn't do this, but he was just like, my lucky charms have gotten bigger. That was such a random line, but I laughed so hard as a kid watching it.
Yeah, me too. Oh my god. It's such a good time.
Yeah, I miss Leprechaun. He's a great character. Leprechaun the Hood was a wild movie. Watching that as a kid, sitting with my dad, they had iced tea in the beginning. This motherfucker pulling weapons out of his afro. I was like, this movie is a trip. This movie is crazy.
To the end. Oh my god. Alright. Let's go back to the interview. I love this tarot talk. I think this is my favorite tarot talk so far. I mean, I love all our tarot talks, but this is funny. This is fun.
I'm having a damn good time. I'm like, yes, I can do. Look, if y'all need another tarot talk, I can do a sequel to my life. I'll make up some stuff just so I can come back. Just let me know.
He will make up some stuff just so he could come back. I think I just met my best friend, yo. I just met my best friend right now.
That makes sense, Jackie. That makes perfect sense with you.
This is coming along. Yes. Look, we're gonna get him into some Edo, and then you're gonna be right here with us. It's gonna be a dream team.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm with it. I'll dim the lights. We gonna get a glass of wine. I'm gonna kick it.
Yes. Oh my god. All right. So as a queer black person, how do you feel horror speaks to you, and do you feel we need more representation? First of all, have you seen The Blackening? I assume you see The Blackening, right?
Oh yes. So
black.
Oh good.
Oh my god. I just love that movie.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Like, I love how that movie just had so much representation in a way where it's just like, yes, I feel seen. I feel very fucking seen. And I love how when it came with like who's the most blackest person, and the guy was just like, I'm gay. Okay, so don't even put me in that category. I was like, oh my god.
I really like it.
See, I can't pick me. That ain't right.
It felt like nobody got excluded. And I think that's what, like, as a black queer person, that's what I want to see. It didn't feel like, you know, Dwayne Perkins' character was the butt of the joke. It just felt like he was being himself authentically. He enmeshed into the group. And there were no weird lobs. Because I feel like sometimes they make black queer character storylines, unfortunately, about that. And so they face all this bullying and discrimination and stuff that we actually deal with in real life. But we want escapism just like the next person. So much so that if the girl peels it off in the end and it's totally like Billy Porter, I'm here for it. Queer rage. Like,
yes,
I really do like what's happening in the genre right now. There have been a couple of like missteps where I think about They/Them, the movie, for example. I try not to get on the bandwagon of dragging it too fiercely because it, you know, it's been done already. But I try to say, I think what happened there was the opposite of what we want. So I made the statement about queer rage, right? But I feel like sometimes there's this sanitization that happens by accident because the filmmakers are afraid of depicting certain characters in certain lights because of what's happened historically. I think that does become a concern. But in my opinion, the trick is just creating more of that type of representation. I think about kind of like my book. I'm just going to plug it real quick. Let me stop. But like,
plug it. You wrote it, baby. Plug it.
I have a few black gay characters in there. So there are some that are villains. There are some that are playing the scenes. There are some that are really nice people. And then there are some that get killed within 2 minutes of being on the page. But all of this is the type of diversification that you need, because when it's a smaller sampling size, then that one depiction holds the entire weight of everything that happens. And that's speaking to a deeper issue. I think the first time I saw myself as a black queer person, I didn't even realize what was going on. Like, mind you, I told you my father showed me Blackula when I was a kid, right? At the time, I didn't know I was gay. But there's fully a black gay man in that movie who becomes a vampire. And I think that's really dope for the time. And even though some of the language is kind of poor when it comes to referencing that character, because on two occasions they call him they refer to him as the F word. Like, it's just, it's a movie of the time. It was a mistake that was made, and he didn't end up being the butt of the joke. I want to be a vampire. If y'all hear me and there's vampires, no, I don't really want to be a vampire. But on screen, I want to be a vampire on screen. Immortality is not for me. That feels like you just keep paying taxes forever, and I don't want that.
Yeah, seriously.
That's
a really good
point. That is the best explanation to not want to be a vampire, is the thought of having to pay taxes for all eternity. I never thought about that, and now I have, and I'm just like, yeah, I don't want that either. Wow. Whole new perspective.
Because have you ever, like, I mean, I gotta be careful saying this. IRS may listen to this. But the point is this. There have been times where I've done my taxes, and they're like, really? Is that all your earnings? There's something you're not telling us. And I'm like, no, submit. They always find out. So I imagine if you become a vampire, what happens is you assume, oh, okay, they're going to think like I'm dead. They're not going to come and no, you're going to get something called a V-99. It's going to come in the mail to wherever you're staying, and they're going to say, okay, we still need a reporting on your earnings, and there is a certain deduction, like an immortality premium or something that you need. And I know that's the case. The government would 100% know that they are vampires, and they would constantly be sending them tax paperwork. Like, we know you. We were. It was a century ago. That's true.
They wouldn't even care that you was a vampire. They just be like, you need to pay your taxes, bro.
That's all we want. And your percentage is higher because you're here forever. So they're probably going to take more.
That is true.
That a is lot true. Of them, probably all damn vampires, the way they be draining us.
Facts. Facts.
I love this conversation.
That's a really great pro, though, about like when you have more than one of a type of a character, you don't have to put everything with their shoulders. Because we know this watching movies with like when there's a single black character, it's like all your hopes and beliefs is like, please don't let this nigga die in the first 5 minutes.
Yes.
Like, come on, brother. Just hang in there. Just hang in there. Like, I remember rooting for LL Cool J watching Deep Blue Sea as a kid. I'm like, I know LL Cool J used to be a rapper and everything, and now he's trying to act, man. But forget all that. I need LL Cool J to live. He ain't even the main character. I need him to make it. And then for him to make it was like, yes, one point us. So, like, I know exactly what you mean, man. It's kind of annoying that so much of the genre had to be that for a while, unless we were, like, seeking things that kind of already had us in it. Like, I always tell Jackie this as a kid, because Jackie likes to joke with me, right, about, like, some of the older horror movies I haven't seen. Like, I've never seen, I've never seen, like, Nosferatu and some of the older films. Like, I didn't even see, like, Whatever Happened to Baby Jane and a bunch of older films that we've even covered on this podcast. And I was like, Jack, you gotta understand, when I was watching horror as a kid, it was whatever my father put on TV. And a lot of the time, we were watching Blade. We were watching The People Under the Stairs.
Yes.
We were watching Tales from the Hood.
Yes.
We were watching Leprechaun. All the Leprechauns, not just Leprechaun from the Hood. I'm watching From Dusk Till Dawn.
Oh, yes.
Like, I was like 8, 9 watching Jeepers Creepers. Like, this is what I saw in my house. Mm-hmm. So, like, I didn't know the old black and white stuff, but I was watching black people in horror. So when people was like, there ain't no black people in this genre, I'm like, you watching the wrong movie. I thought I was Point Dexter as a kid from People Under the Stairs.
Look.
I thought that was me. I'm like, I live in the projects. That's my life. I understand this kid. Like, so, I get exactly what you mean, man.
I love People Under the Stairs. Like, I literally have a framed picture because, like, this artist, like, did a rendering. I'll snap a picture and send it to you guys later. It looks so cool. And I was like, oh, my God, this is one of my favorite movies from when I was a kid. And it's another example of where you see yourself on screen as a youth and you don't even put it together. Like, I really love the movie, but I took it for granted. It wasn't until I got older and looked back and said, I was like a young black boy watching this and I got to see myself on screen. This is cool.
Yeah. Yep. It was a big deal. Tell us from the Hood. I'm like, I'm not a gangster, but I know the life they're talking about because of where I grew up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know what they're talking about. I know what the lessons this movie's trying to get across from everything that they're doing. Like, I get this. Yeah. It's crazy how many people haven't seen it. But, of course, you know, people can see it now. That's great. But, I mean, at the time, there were a lot of friends I showed the movie to who, like, never even heard of it. It was like, wow, this is something. I'm like, yeah, man. we had the stuff, man. We had our black horror stuff out there. And all the genres have this. Every ethnicity, I would say, kind of had their stuff out there.
Yeah.
What was in the theaters? What was the mainstream thing at the time?
Yeah. I love where it's led to because they did such a good job, like, bringing this up in Horror Noir, the documentary, that even the problematic depictions from back in the day did a number on starting to crack that door open so that more representation that would be better would flow in and be, you know, come behind the cameras. And I think that's why we have such amazing feats like the new Candyman. I don't care what anybody says. That thing.
Yeah, I like
that. It was good.
She did her thing.
A lot.
Mm-hmm.
He did her.
A lot.
The layers. Like, I feel like every single time I talk about Candyman, I've talked about it so many times, but it's never enough. Like, the layers that they address in that film are just so exceptional. I'm just so proud of it, to be honest.
That's true. And it's funny.
It was Nia DaCosta, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I believe she's also doing the Marvels movie.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know this.
Which I'm excited for.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned, like, the new Candyman remake. Because I know that movie alone, from what I saw when it came out and people who watched it, especially on Twitter, I mean, my Twitter is just flooded with just horror content. That's why I always call it horror Twitter.
Yes.
I love how it was interesting how it kind of divided the community when that movie came out, where some were just like, this movie feels like it's a movie for white people, or like, this movie isn't for us, or like, oh my God, finally something more relatable, blah, blah. Not to say the first one wasn't relatable, because the first one had its own stuff that even you knew, like, okay, you kind of deserve what you're getting, you know, when he pops up. Like, you kind of deserve it. Where in the second one, it was definitely a heavy social commentary movie. Very heavy. But to me, like, I mean, I always talk about this with Kendall as well, and I'm pretty sure you noticed it too. We know when a movie is for us and when a movie is not for us. We already know. We can tell. We can feel it. We'll watch it. We read about it. And we just know, like, oh, that's not for us. That's for them. You know, who wants to be ignorant and stuff like that. But the remake, I really enjoyed it for what it was. And I felt like it was for us, especially those who loved the original one. And yes, it was a lot of social commentary because it related to what everything was going on. Because, I mean, again, like, reality is horror. I get so tired, and I told this to Kendall all the time. Like, whenever something pops up on Twitter, I'm just like, I don't want to see it. I want to get off it because I'm tired of having this discussion every fucking day. I'm tired of having it. And then to have it in the movie, because, again, horror is, like, the only genre where I feel like it's acceptable to have these conversations that no one wants to have. Where they're like, oh, I feel uncomfortable. Let's not have it. But yet Candyman did it. And it was interesting how divided the community was. And it wasn't even just like white people saying, oh, this movie is about. It was our people saying that. And I found that very fucking interesting. Where I'm like, I kind of get where you're coming from. But at the same time, I feel like this was for us. But again, like, we know when something is for us and when it's not for us. We know when it's a lesson for the other group. And it's just something traumatic for us that we don't want to see. But it's interesting when you mention Candyman. I love both movies, and I really was a big fan of Nia DaCosta's version. Like, it was really well done.
You made my day, because I never thought about that. When I saw how divided it was, I couldn't figure it out, to be honest. But you're right. The conversations that are being had, since the movie was for us, this is a conversation that may be uncomfortable for. That's interesting. That is 100% what happened. Because if you start to really drill into why people didn't really get up into this new Candyman, it is kind of a weird, they can't really put their hands on what it is. But
I think I know why.
Oh, look.
I'll let you finish your statement.
No, I said all I need to say. But if we synced up that quick, that means the message got there. <look. laughs> But yeah.
You said it exactly right. I told Jackie this even when we did it, because I can't remember if we did the episode after we saw the movie.
Yeah.
It was after.
Or it might have been before. Yeah, okay, yeah. So it was after we saw the movie. We saw the new one. We did, because we did the original. We didn't even do the new one yet, but we mentioned the recent one. So Candyman in general just has an interesting history, like, in terms of how people look at that movie, like, specifically black people. I'm not even going to talk about anybody else. I'm going to say specifically black people. That movie has an interesting way that people view it, like the original. So, like, I feel like everyone kind of loves the movie, but, like, most black people love the movie. Because, you know, Tony Todd, we get the legend, that man is still working. Mm-hmm. Like, he did his thing in that fucking movie. But I just feel like it has an interesting, like, history, because a lot of people view that movie almost exclusively as black man pursuing a white woman. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember when we had on Carmen, when we did the State of the Horror Union, and she was talking about, she was like, I like Candyman, but, like, you know, that black man chasing that white woman, I can't fuck with that. And that's how a lot of people view that movie. Like, they view it like that's what it is at the end of the day. This black dude really wants his white woman so eagerly, he's doing all these things. However, I like to say, and this is an episode, I think that's missing a huge point of what the movie really is. Like, it is a love story. It is an interracial love story. But, like, you can't disconnect that from, like, who the character is. Like, who Candyman was as a man matters, and who he is as the quote-unquote monster. And, like, the movie is literally trying to show you the story of not just an interracial love story, but, like, how that impacts time and how that impacts community, right? Mm-hmm. The man was, go through all of it, but the man was killed because he fell in love with a white woman. He was a free man, so he wasn't even a slave. He was a free man. Rich white families paid the man because he had a skill. He was painting. He was drawing all these rich people, because that's the thing rich people love. They love art when they get money. They paying this man to create all this art. The moment he falls in love with a white woman, he goes from being a free man to essentially a nigga with the ER. That's basically what happened to him historically. And then the man ends up being killed. They smear honey on him, had the bees attack him, chop his hood off, place it with a hook, all this stuff. They did all these things as a man. The interracial part is a part of that. But not just that. The movie is, you got to remember, the movie is being shown from the lens of an outsider. So the movie is for us, but as a black person viewing the movie, we are the black community that Helen is trying to interview.
Mm-hmm.
That's who we are. That's a great point.
But the movie is showing it from her perspective. But if you're black watching this movie, you're like, yep, white lady walking to the hood. She start asking questions. I ain't answering none either. Like, that's how you react to it. That's how you're supposed to react to it. But the movie is supposed to be from her POV. So anytime this white lady do something that you think is insane, you're like, I wouldn't do that. It's like, yes, you wouldn't do that because you're not the white person in this scenario. You're the black person in this scenario. An outsider would do this to know everything about the insider group. Like, she wasn't necessarily trying to gentrify the neighborhood, but she was trying to find out community secrets. Mm-hmm. So this is where all of her troubles come from. If you view the movie from that lens, I think it's just, it negates the fact that the man is just pursuing a white woman. Because it's a lot more than that.
Yeah.
You get Ooh. To investigate what it means to be a foreigner trying to integrate. You get to investigate what it means to be in the community and trying to keep a foreigner out. Like, you see that even they were accepting of her by the end of the movie. Like, the movie has a lot more layers to it than that. And I think some people probably didn't view it through that lens. So watching the recent one, they're just like, all right, so they just randomly threw in the fact that he's a black man and that all these other black people are basically Candyman's. Sure. And I'm like, that's, you're missing the point. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The connection is that this is a lived experience for all of us. Mm-hmm. The lived experience can just look different based on your race, but that's the connection, is the lived experience. So I'm going to step off my soapbox now, but that's what it is.
No, nah, but you hit it right on the nail. You hit it on the nail. And like, I really love that you, like, as you were going through it, you're touching on the fact this was somebody who was creating art, and then how you said he switched to the horror ER the minute that this thing happened, that he fell in love with a white woman, and it shows how they dehumanized him through that, and you see that repeated in Candyman in a way that isn't catering to the white gaze, because that's what Anthony was going through. Like, he was being dehumanized. Mm-hmm. He was being treated like cattle to push out this art, despite where he was in the process. And as a result of these gatekeepers who, you know, they control whether or not he gets the exhibit. They control whether or not he gets the attention. The moment that he detracts from it, and keep in mind, right, he was blowing up around the time that he's just focusing on our trauma, around the time that he is doing these paintings that are gruesome and even, like, painful to his persons. You know, like, this isn't something that's just mentally damaging to him. He's literally falling apart in front of us as this exhibit is about to go live. And the white gatekeeper's like, oh, yes, he's getting all this. It's the same thing, but it's in a modern lens. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people do discount this stuff because sometimes they don't want to see the trauma, for example. They may say like, oh, well, I don't really want to see this because, you know, there's so much trauma against black people. And that's definitely people's right. But the way that Nia handled it here, it opens it up to a much larger discussion. And it really makes Candyman a piece that perseveres. And it even... it's so brilliant that they do this without detracting against the Bernard Rose one. Not Bernard Rose, that child ain't what I meant to say, yep. But you know what I mean, the original one. Like, I can talk about Candyman all day. Like, I went on Horror Queers to talk about it, and Trace made a really good point about how you see Candyman or Daniel Robitaille in becoming Candyman become more of a personification of just rage. He is not even resembling himself in this new version because of how the rage has just destroyed him, and it's how it's through his humanity. And that's why even that one argument that people make that, oh, why is he on our side of the tracks, you know, getting us out of here, and we didn't do anything to him? He's rage. He has been destroyed through rage. This is a vengeful spirit. Like, and when you think about who wrote this, like the original story, The Forbidden by Clive Barker, which, oh my God, great short story. Like, this is literally somebody who created the Cenobites. So he knows what it's like to see your humanity shredded before you and become something else, no matter what the means. And if you think about it, Candyman has a lot of parallels to the Deadites. Like, if you really just think about how he works, how he exists in a dimension parallel to our own, and how there's a certain level of sublime suffering that he experiences that is something that we can't understand. Like, I'm obsessed with Candyman. I think it's one of the, like, best works that I've had a lot of time digging into. I don't know if it's like, look, I gotta get off of it. I have to. I'm leaving. Look, we go to the next question. I can't do this. I'm sorry. Like you said, I'm getting off my soapbox. I'm standing next to you now. We're all next to each other. Let's do it.
It's cool, man. We appreciate it. This is why we had these conversations, you know? I appreciate it. We appreciate it. We're going to talk about this some more off air, so they're not going to get this part of the recording. But we appreciate it, man. Thank you for coming. We're going to hop up out of here so we can actually have some even more fun when we stop recording. So thank you for coming. I appreciate it. I appreciate you being here. Jackie, you want to say anything before we go?
Yes, tell our listeners where they can find you, anywhere they can find you, all your social links, everything.
Okay. Well, first of all, thank y'all for having me out. This has been a lot of fun. My eyebrows are still touching my hairline. But you can find me talking about the horror genre and also random things like conspiracy theories with my co-host, Sheree the Slayer and Zero Gravity on Blurdy Massacre, which you can listen to anywhere. And you can also hang out with me on TikTok. Please do. I love talking Vampire Diaries, horror fan theories, Freddy versus Jason versus Ash, and any random thing on my page. A good place to start is the playlist, because I try to organize my disparate thoughts, but it's at Brother Ghoulish. And you can also see me writing articles for a Creepy Catalog, and I also do some videos over there as well. Sometimes I'm behind the veil, but you can feel me. And if you want to meet me in person, I'm haunting an underpass near you. So keep your eyes peeled.
I like that. I like that a lot. Nice. Underpass near you. I'm going to use that. For now. I'm going to use that. I like that. But yes, again, thank you so much. We definitely want to bring you back on later on because we have so much to talk about. This is so much fun. We have like, oh my God. I believe we all became best friends just now, so that's cool.
Yes.
we'll start the group chat, sure.
Yes.
Yes.
And yes, thank you for those who've been listening. And until next time, ooh, you ghosts, goodbye.